feminism was being highlighted in the world.
Yeah.
At that time, people used to just disagree with all the rules and every rule that consisted of men, father, I don't know, brother,
exactly.
The opposite gender.
Yeah.
And that was completely leading the society towards these negative ideas for like men and fathers.
Exactly.
And I really agree that the father's approval, we're going to talk about the family approval later on as well, but going back to the cultural differences, another thing that I forgot to mention is this. When we say that girls need to be aware of the cultural differences, we're not necessarily talking about the fact that they shouldn't marry a person if the other person is from another place, like another country. What I am talking about is that girls should be aware of these differences.
Yeah.
They should get to know each other's background, like the cultural background of the boy who is from another country, whom the father and the parents of the girl have approved. And we need to know the information about the other person. If everything was going okay, there is no problem, no barrier. Even in Islam, we have no barriers towards marriage. As we had even some tribal positions at the time of our imams for the marriage.
Exactly.
But they disagreed and they took a stand against these kinds of beliefs.
At this very moment, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Yes, it's very important to understand the reality the way it is. It's exactly the thing that we're talking about right in here in today's Muslim Lady. That is, you must get into all the decisions that you make with an open eye. Yes, welcome back. This is Muslim Lady. Sister Nahid and I were talking about different factors that are important for us to make a perfect decision for marriage if we are to get into that decision.
Yeah, after talking about the cultural differences, as you previously mentioned, we need the family approval.
Yeah.
Like, we need our parents, the previous generation who has experienced ups and downs of life to agree with the big decision that the girl or boy, especially the girl with her emotional status, is making. And we need their ideas, we need their counselation, and we need to take into account what they are considering as important. I guess last month, I heard bad news about one of my friends. It was about my friend who is just studying for PhD. She's a successful girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that she is divorced. While, she has a 2-year-old son.
Oh,
and
it
was just a big shock for me. But when I talked to her, I asked her for the reasons of this this big shock. She just told me that my education and career goals didn't match my husband's. Like, he disagreed with me going to university a lot. He didn't want me to be in this major. He was okay with just studying, with going to work, but he didn't match my expectations, and I couldn't match his expectations, meet his expectations. From that time, I'm just thinking of this very important factor of career and goal, and goals in like education. Like, we need to know each other's careers well,
yeah,
the education well, and even the goals well. Like, where am I going to be in the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is my partner going to agree with me or not?
I think it has got a lot to do with how supportive the other person is going to be.
Yeah, but first of all, their mental ideas, you know, are they even okay with the major I'm studying? Is the person going to be fine with me studying for, I don't know, PhD, not being home for about maybe at least 5 hours a day for studying or work? The one who gets hurt a lot is the girl.
Even if they quit out of love, then it has got nothing to worry about. But then the problem starts when they do this as an obligation.
Yeah.
When they do this as if they have been forced to do it.
Yeah.
And like, if you become a mother and then you quit your job, you would never feel regretful for whatever you did, because that's the thing you did out of love.
Yeah.
But when it comes to force, then the story goes to different directions.
Yeah, and the impacts it will have will never be compensated. Like,
sure. Sure, that's
true. That's why the next factor I wanted to mention was the education and career goals. We need to get to know each other well. Mm-hmm. We need to just have everything clear between the both of us.
And something not to forget, just as you were saying, sometimes at the very beginning of their journey into marriage, the boys usually would say that, okay, I will do this, I will do that. They give you promises like in Neverland, the promises that are never going to happen. But then you have to take these things into consideration as well. When you are talking about future, try to be so honest with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Honesty is so important.
And having counselors around, you know, these days we have too many sessions that I've heard they completely analyze each person's mindset and then...
Ah, you mean to meet a psychologist and then they...
Exactly,
I have heard about that as well. Then they would draw the tree of their brain, I guess, something like that.
They kind of analyze the person's mindset and
personality.
Figure it out if they're lying.
And then to recognize if the two of them can match or not.
Yeah, there will be some effects that can never be forgotten.
Exactly. Just let's go for a short break and a change of mood, and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. Still, you're listening to Muslim Lady, where we're talking about different factors to have a perfect marriage. But then I must remind you again of this very point that marriage is a multidimensional issue that would happen in anyone's life. As for girls, since we're talking to ladies and girls out there, the situation might get even worse because us as girls have got this emotional side that goes beyond what every other person sees. So another important factor that I would love to add is to control your emotions, because I see a lot of girls who would just get into marriage with their heart, not with their mind.
That is somehow connected to the emotional maturity.
We discussed that.
Yeah, and we need girls to just be aware of their emotions. When they know their emotions well, again, also we can, you know, these factors are kind of connected to each other. They're like a circle. If you have enough information before marriage, you can control your emotions well because you know yourself and your own nature, like the nature of a girl with her own mindset, with her own brain that is sometimes too emotional.
Exactly.
It's like sometimes the heart decides and even the brain just goes with the flow. And we need to have the information over ourselves to be able to control.
Exactly. It's nothing wrong with being emotional, of course. To decide with your heart is something so lovely. But then, as you just said it, we must take this into consideration that it's the thing that exists between the heart and the mind. And there must be always a balance between these two. Like, we know girls better because we're girls, and we know how it is to live with a heart that goes so wild.
Yeah.
And the last factor.
Yeah, the last, not the least, is the support system.
Mm.
What I'm going to highlight here is somehow related to the problems after marriage. I mean, after the big decisions, because the previous factors were too important. They were the most important factors that were leading to that
after big decision. After the bygones are the bygones.
Yeah. And here we are mentioning the support system that needs to be there for the couples. Like, are they going to be supported by the family, by friends?
Oh, yeah,
by,
this is very important.
By the community, by the society, even by the country that they are living in. These days we are hearing a lot about the loans for marriage and these kinds of stuff. But still, we can see that sometimes the couples are not supported well.
Just as you brought up the story of support, I do agree. Yes, support is very important. But then let's have a look on the other side of the story as well. There are so many couples who are suffering from this independence issue. Like, if you go to the girl will tell you that my husband is not independent from his parents or family. This is also another important factor. Like, when you are going to marry, the important thing about the other person, I guess, is how independent they are.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, again, going back to the issue of keeping a balance between
exactly.
the two. Like, yeah. we're not
moderation.
Saying, exactly. We're not saying that the boy and girl should be, like, separated from their families,
yeah.
like, totally independent.
Exactly.
But what we are seeking is the boy and the girl having their own status in their own world at the same time, being still connected
yeah.
to the community, to friends, and to
mm-hmm.
family.
Yeah.
We really need this support system for them
mm-hmm.
to be prepared, to be thought about,
exactly.
to be logical. Because, yeah.
yeah,
sometimes it's not about the boy not keeping the balance between life and, like, parents. Sometimes it's even the parents' issue. Like,
yeah, it's
they're
the
not keeping
issue.
The balance. They're just making the boy or girl be too much dependent on them. So we need it like a system, like a way that keeps everything in a,
mm-hmm.
at a normal level.
Try to have this in mind that you must keep your expectations as low as possible. Now, this is not unfortunate to say it. I guess this is reality. This is facing the reality. Sometimes we just build castles in the air and we forget about the very fact that life is a real thing in a common world. So just try to have a clear vision of this world and how it works and how human beings are. Do not think of the other person as this angel who's coming
yeah.
from heaven, doing no mistakes, doing no wrong thing. They have no wrong attitude. No, it's not like that. And life is never a peachy pinky story sort of a thing. So thank you, Sister Nahid, for contributing in here in today's episode. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed it, dear ladies. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
World Oats Day in the heat of Gaza war. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. World Oats Day of 2024 arrives while 6 months have passed since the start of Al-Aqsa storm in Gaza. This astounding operation has yielded very important outcomes for the region, as it has surely accelerated the end of the cancerous tumor of Israel to result in a very bright future for the region and the world at large. The 7th of October 2023 will last forever in the history of West Asia. On that day, the combatants of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, attacking the Zionist regime, imposed the greatest defeat on Israel since its illegitimate birth in 1948. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called it as an irreparable defeat, saying that Israel, after the operation, would be different from the Israel before. The fabricated Zionist regime, after this disgraceful defeat, which shook the regime to its foundations, launched bestial attacks on the people of Gaza, leading to over 33,000 martyrs and 76,000 injured, most of whom are women and children. Now, 6 months after the outbreak of war, what are the achievements of Al-Aqsa Storm? Please stay tuned for the first part of the two-part special feature on the World Quds Day to review these achievements. The most important achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm is to shatter the myth of invincibility of the Zionist regime army. This fake regime, through worldwide propaganda supported by the Western media, has sold to the world public opinion that Israel has the most powerful army in West Asia and one of the most powerful armies in the world. This media deception has continued for over 7 decades. Al-Aqsa Storm not only shattered this myth, but also it was a very big scandal for the Zionist regime's intelligence and security system, which used to boast of detecting any move against the regime. More than 1,500 Zionist forces were killed in Al-Aqsa Storm, and 550 others have also been killed for the past 6 months. The Israeli intelligence and surveillance organizations failed to monitor and detect this great operation, which had been designed several months earlier. Furthermore, these organizations have failed to find a place of keeping their captives by Hamas after 6 months, and that in a 300,000-kilometer area. Elijah Majnir, analyst of international military issues with the Egyptian daily Al-Misr Al-Yaum, said that the evaluation of the developments in the battlefront proves the military defeat of the Israeli regime in the war against Palestine. He adds that since Israel has not reached the goals such as liberation of its captives, defeating of Hamas and prevention of attacks on the settlements, it can be said that Israel has been defeated. Another achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm is the great victory of Hamas, as the Zionist regime had promised to defeat it and liberate its prisoners, neither of which have materialized. Meanwhile, despite Israeli genocide in Gaza and the heavy propaganda against Hamas in the world media, opinion polls show that more than 70% of the people of Gaza continue supporting Hamas and Al-Aqsa Storm. This has been confirmed even by the Secularist Political Research Center close to the Self-Rule Authority of Palestine. This poll indicates that 71% of Palestinians have announced their satisfaction with Al-Aqsa Storm. Hamas achieved this victory while war with the Zionist regime is an asymmetric war, hence, beyond classical military standards. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said to the visiting head of Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, that what caused the failure of the Zionist regime in attaining its military goals was the historical patience of the people of Gaza in the face of the Zionist regime's crimes and savagery. Another important achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm and 6 months of the Zionist regime's war against Gaza is that it destroyed the view that the Palestinian issue has ended. Al-Aqsa Storm turned Palestine to the most important global issue. For the recent years, particularly with the betrayal of some of the reactionary Arab regimes to normalize ties with Israel, the Palestinian issue was going to the margin and had almost lost its prominence as the priority of the Islamic world. Today, Palestine is a top issue of not just Islamic world, but the whole world. That's why today it is very ordinary to see demonstrations in France, Germany, Britain, Australia, and the US with hundreds of thousands of people pouring to the streets to demand for the rights of innocent people of Gaza and ending of the ongoing Israeli genocide in the region. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, said to Ismail Haniyeh that the patience and the steadfastness of the people in Gaza is a grand phenomenon which has really dignified Islam and, in spite of the enemy's intention, has turned the issue of Palestine into their first world issue. Al-Aqsa Storm and 6 months of the Israeli war against Gaza have deepened and highlighted internal differences in the occupied territories. These differences have been there for the past years too. 5 parliamentary elections were held in 4 years, between 2019 to 2023, but Netanyahu's cabinet was set up with the collaboration of extremists. The war in Gaza has further revealed the extremist nature of Netanyahu's warmongering cabinet in the occupied territories. The recent trip of Benny Gantz of war cabinet to the US and Britain was an indicative of internal differences in the Israeli entity. He has turned into the main option of premiership after Netanyahu and Joe Biden administration and the European allies of Israel are very much interested in his coming to power. In reaction to his sudden trips, Benjamin Netanyahu tried to prevent appropriation of government facilities for Gantz and cooperation of the Zionist regime embassies in the US and Britain with him. This was done to show that Israel has a prime minister. However, the latest internal difference inside the Israeli cabinet is related to Gideon Moshe Sar. Sar, who was justice minister between 2021 to 2022, has announced to step down from the cabinet. The move prophesizes the disintegration of the shaky warmongering cabinet. The solidarity and coherence of the axis of resistance was another great achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm and the Israeli war against Gaza. The players of resistance have, on the one hand, tried to prevent the expansion of war in the region, and on the other hand, they have taken important measures in support for Gaza. The Lebanese anti-terrorist movement Hezbollah and the valorous Yemeni Ansarullah are 2 important players of the axis of resistance which have officially entered the war against the Zionist regime. This shows that resistance has not geographical boundary. Ayatollah Khamenei said in his speech on the first day of the Iranian New Year, "The resistance front has unveiled its true situation. Perhaps neither the Americans nor the Westerners nor the regional governments didn't know the power of the resistance and the ability of the resistance in the region as it really existed and exists. But now they have realized." Al-Aqsa Storm has also proved the defeat of the US. The United States has stood by the Zionist regime since the very start of the war on October 7, 2023, as it has called it, the Israeli genocide as legitimate defense. The U.S. President Joe Biden traveled to the occupied territories a little after the outbreak of war, but his State Secretary Antony Blinken has traveled 7 times to the region during the past 6 months. These trips, on the one hand, meant the U.S. full support for and complicity with the Zionist regime in its unprecedented crimes in Gaza. On the other hand, however, these trips laid bare the differences between the two comrades in crime. The U.S. has 3 times vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolutions for ceasefire in Gaza. This was an ethical scandal for the U.S. government. The latest resolution, which was faced with the neutral vote of the American member of the UNSC, not only had not mentioned the name of Hamas, but also had called for halting a war in Gaza. And the climate in the UNSC session was clearly anti-Israel and anti-US. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said in his speech in the beginning of the new Iranian year, America adopted the worst possible condition in the issue of Gaza. America chose the worst possible condition in Gaza region. It did something that made it hated in the whole world. These people who demonstrate in the streets of London, Paris, and other European countries, and America itself in favor of Palestine, are indeed announcing hatred towards America. America has become hated in the world. It was hated in the region. It has become 10 times more hated.
Killings of journalists. Part 1. Being a journalist, regardless of nationality, is a job that is full of dangers and obstacles. It is also the job of truth seekers. The Palestinian journalist is destined to live within the walls of these violations. But despite these hard conditions, he or she still has determination, boldness, persistence, and strength.
The reality is that Palestinian journalists have a double suffering. On one hand, they are part of the Palestinian people who are subject to crimes and violations that qualify to genocide and war crimes. On the other hand, they have a dangerous job, especially in this hard environment under which Palestinians live because of the occupation. The Gaza Strip is besieged, while in the West Bank there is the apartheid wall, settlements, Judaization of Jerusalem, frequent violations and arrests. This affects the entire Palestinian society, and especially the journalists, as the occupation wants to black out the truth and their violations of human rights, as well as the state terrorism it practices. The Israeli occupation practiced all sorts of humiliation and subjugation methods on journalists. But along the years, the Palestinian journalist refused becoming a tool in the hands of the occupation and Israeli intelligence. And this made journalists sacrifice a lot. The Palestinian journalist plays a role as significant as that of the Palestinian politician or the fighter. To each his role. We have always seen the Palestinian journalist in the field. He would use his cameras and other tools to perform heroic and honorable achievements. He would always document and publicize the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. He would always show the world the suffering the incursions, the killing and torture Palestinians suffer on the hands of the Israeli occupation.
This boldness made the Israeli occupation army not differentiate between a journalist and another. So everyone is targeted and everyone is wanted.
Regardless of their nationality, journalists pursue finding the truth, removing injustice, and unveiling crimes of the occupation, no matter who that occupation may be. We have seen examples for that where reporters for networks in the United States and Europe expose crimes committed by the U.S. and other countries. An exception to this is the few journalists who are affiliated with their government, no matter who that government may be. Such journalists have a questionable credibility and are renounced in their communities. Journalists who come to Palestine are our colleagues and friends. We have to help them, and the Israeli occupation has to respect their freedom of movement and work, like it respects our freedom. But unfortunately, the Israeli occupation, as you know, does not respect any kind of freedom, and it continues its violations against these journalists. The Israeli occupation does not differentiate between a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian journalist. The non-Palestinian journalist tries to document the events as they are, so the Israeli occupation relentlessly targets them and any other journalist who tries to document events on the ground without discrimination. The Palestinian journalist works in an area rich with events. There are incursions and airstrikes all the time. And as a journalist tries to cover these crimes, he will be a target to the Israeli occupation. The Israeli occupation does not want the journalist to succeed in covering these violations, because any footage that comes out of the Gaza Strip exposes the Israeli occupation's army. That is why in the beginning of any incursion, they fire and attack journalists to get them away from the action zone so they cannot document these incursions or any targeting of civilians. Therefore, if they injure the journalist, he would be taken to the hospital and there will be no one to document the events, so the occupation army can do whatever they want. If journalists were there, this means there were witnesses on the crime. There are no witnesses on the crime as long as there are no journalists. Palestinian journalists have been subject to a variety of violations that reach the killing in cold blood. Other violations include arrest and detention for extended periods, especially the administrative detention with no accusation, as well as confiscation of their media coverage badges, especially in the West Bank. Journalists face continuous violations similar to the case during their coverage of the war on Gaza or the usual occupation's incursions to the Palestinian areas. Many of them were injured while covering the events, and some of these injured journalists lost their ability to perform their job.
Assassination of journalists in general is part of the repulsive occupation, because Palestinian journalists actually like the job, which unveils the ugly face of the occupation, and have determination and persistence. The Israeli occupation just assassinates them. They kill them to kill the truth. This is how the occupation envisions killing and assassinating them.
During the attack on Jabalia, there was an incursion in Izbat Abd Rabbo right behind us. We were covering the incursion on the first and second day. It seems that the Israeli occupation army did not like our movement in the area, so they fired at us multiple times, but we continued documenting this crime. I was standing right here when the tanks advanced a little further. They saw me, and right away one of the tanks fired a shell directly towards me. After I was taken to the hospital, I was surprised that the shell also hit other people and they were killed. When I woke up and became conscious, I realized that my best friend and the rest of the team were also injured. After that, we went back to the field and continued working. These violations and targeting of journalists are not going to stop us from doing our work. By the way, this building we are in right now was hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation during the war on the Gaza Strip. Other colleagues were on the roof of this building and were targeted as well while covering the events. However, none of us, the journalists, our colleagues who were targeted, their families, or even the Palestinian Authority took judicial action. So there is weakness or failure in this side. We have to encourage families of victims, civil society organizations, the journalist syndicate, and the Palestinian Authority to take judiciary action against the Israeli occupation's war criminals. These Israeli war criminals should not remain unpunished. We can generally say that these violations frequently committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian journalists are evidence that it tries to cover the truth and isolate Palestine from its surrounding. The occupation isolated the Gaza Strip through the siege and isolates the West Bank from time to time. Despite all these hardships, Palestinian journalists played their role in delivering the message and suffering of Palestinian people, as well as documenting the violations that exposed the Israeli occupation. Therefore, the camera was able to expose the organized terrorism, war crimes, and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli occupation. Claims were filed on the issue of targeting journalists, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association, but procrastination has always prevailed in these cases. There were also claims by local and international organizations, but these also were put aside, especially the ones regarding Al-Aqsa Association. The justification given most of the time, among others, was that a counterclaim of the one presented is filed. This is evidence that there are restrictions on journalists and their claims, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. The Israeli occupation is a renegade state practicing state terrorism according to the international humanitarian law. However, the balance of powers with the United States hegemony blocks any attempts to sue the Israeli occupation in the United Nations, especially in the Security Council. Using Article 7 of the international law would force the Israeli occupation to subdue and abide to the international conventions and the international humanitarian law. When the issue on the table concerns an Arab country or so, the United Nations decisions are enforced immediately, and forces like UNIFIL would deploy to employ decisions of the Security Council. In the Palestinian case, everything is pending and no serious sanctions were enforced to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing more crimes against Palestinians, and this provides a shield for the occupation to carry on.
Human values are alien to the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini. Everybody together, unanimously with one voice, present at the glorious demonstration of God's Day.
Today's special.
Oh, Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam and welcome. You are listening to another episode of today's special under the topic of the unity of Islamic Ummah during the month of Ramadan.
أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم ومنك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا الله فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان
So be with us on Thursday, 24th of Ramadan, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri Calendar, corresponding to the 16th of Farvardin, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri Calendar, and the 4th of April, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. Let's open the Holy Quran and listen to verse 92 of Chapter Al-Anbiya.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن هذه أمتكم أمة واحدة وأنا ربكم فاعبدون
Indeed, this, your religion, is one religion, and I am your Lord, so worship me.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The whole divine religions have the same aim and lead to the same destination, and monotheism and unity of the world are the basis of them. Those who always cause separation among people must prepare themselves to respond before the throne of Allah. This holy verse implies that those great prophets, whom we mentioned formerly, were totally a single ummah. Their programs were the same and their final aim and destination were also the same, though they were in different periods and in separate environments and their styles and manner of invitations having some particular specialities were various.
قال الإمام الصادق عليه السلام كان رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إذا كان العشر الأواخر يعني من رمضان اعتكف في المسجد وضربت له قبة من شعر وشمر المئزر وطوى فراشه
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa ali used to retreat in the mosque the last 10 nights of Ramadan, where a tent of fur would be pitched for him, and he would roll up the skirting and lay out his bedding.
Ramadan and the unity of Islamic Ummah. Ramadan binds the Ummah together in remembrance of Allah and fellow Muslims in a joyous unity. Muslims' feelings of love, compassion, forgiveness, mutual aid, and solidarity are strengthened still further. Fasting, remembrance of Allah, the poor, and praying for each other increase our moral virtues, spirituality, and heighten our consciousness of others. It is therefore Not surprising that Muslims around the world look forward for this month and feel sadness when it departs. A global community that looks forward to a month of sacrifice, deprivation, and constant prayers is truly unique. The unification enjoyed during Ramadan must act as a standard for Muslims throughout the rest of the year. It is the need of our time.
Exalted Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has always called on Muslims to maintain unity, solidarity and fraternity, and has considered this issue a factor in strengthening the power of the Islamic community. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and the infallible Imams also called upon people and their companions at any time to brotherhood and fraternity. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said in this regard, a Muslim is a brother to a Muslim. He never oppresses him, does not make him suffer, and does not leave him alone in the face of events. The blessed month of Ramadan is of great importance to Muslims around the world due to the descent of the Quran, which is considered the enduring miracle of Islam. And during this opportunity, people pay more attention to the points in this divine book and implement its teachings in their daily lives. Therefore, it is necessary to keep in mind Allah's emphasis on maintaining unity and strengthening the spirit of brotherhood during this divine feast and internalizing this spirit in oneself. One of the issues emphasized during the blessed month of Ramadan is the pact of brotherhood. What recommendations and advice does the Quran, the infallible Imams and religious leaders have for this matter? Not only in narrations and hadith, but also in the Holy Quran, there is a great emphasis on this issue of unity and brotherhood. For example, in verse 103 of Surah Al-Imran, after emphasizing piety, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala advises people to brotherhood and fraternity, saying, and hold fast altogether to the cable of Allah, and do not separate, and remember the blessing of Allah upon you. When you were enemies, and He brought your hearts together, and you became by His favor brothers.
In the holy month of Ramadan, the month of Allah.
In the holy month of Ramadan, the month of Allah, be with IRIB English Radio, today's special.
Every day from IRIB English Radio.
This is today's special, and a Ramadan no Palestinian will ever forget. Sure, Ramadan has not been carefree for the people of Gaza for years due to Israel's relentless blockade. Many parents were going without food in this holiest of months to feed their children long before the beginning of this genocide. Yet death and destruction has never been this close, and fear about the future this acute in this once beautiful land during any Ramadan ever. But this year it is much, much worse. Palestinians in the West Bank are not only agonizing over the genocide of their brothers and sisters in Gaza, but also trying to survive relentless attack from settlers, police, and soldiers. They wonder who among them will be the next to be arbitrarily arrested, displaced, or assaulted. They wonder whether they and their loved ones will live to see another Ramadan.
ومضات خير للعباد ومضات نور للفؤاد ومضات خير للعباد ومضات نور للفؤاد تدعو إلى
يا إخوتي هيا بنا نسلك طريق الراشدين، يا إخوتي هيا بنا نسلك طريق الذاكرين.
A day beyond Islamic countries. Tomorrow is Al-Quds Day. On Al-Quds Day, demonstrations are held around the world in over 80 Islamic and non-Islamic countries. Among these are Malaysia, India, Singapore, Indonesia, Turkey, United States of America, Canada, Norway, Azerbaijan, Sudan, England, Bahrain, Bosnia, Tunisia, Pakistan, Australia, Iraq, Germany, Romania, Kuwait, Spain, South Africa, Sweden, Venezuela, Albania, Yemen, and Iran. Western news agencies generally attempt to play down the events of Al-Quds Day. They either remain silent or use vague expressions such as thousands to show that the number of protesters is not significant. But like Arbaeen processions, the flood of Muslim demonstrators cannot be hidden or ignored.
You know what makes a nation great? My dear friends, what makes a nation great is if they were to prioritize humanity, if they were to prioritize peace, if they were to be colorblind towards who is being murdered and whoever is being killed, regardless of who they are. We're meant to rise to the occasion, and we are meant to speak against injustice and tyranny. The collective message of all prophets of God, the collective message of the Abrahamic faith, is to stand against oppression. It is a crime according to all religions to kill civilians. It is a crime according to all religions to kill the woman and the elderly and children, to bomb hospitals, houses of worship, mosques and churches have been destroyed every single day. Places which are meant to be a safe haven for people. Let us gather our hearts and our souls, wherever we are around the world, to remember, to eulogize the 6,000 souls that have perished, the 2,500 children that have been murdered.
That was end for today's special. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we attend to this demonstration for the Palestinians. Thank you very much and fi amanillah.
يا رزاق يا غفار يا قهار يا وهاب يا توار يا رحيم يا عزيز يا سميع يا بصير يا لطيف يا خبير يا حليم يا عظيم يا كبير.
flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. And nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Tonight, a blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. Nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down Gaza tonight.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Israel presses ahead with its relentless airstrikes and shelling of the besieged Gaza Strip as the death toll from the genocidal war surpasses 33,000.